America's healthcare system is cracking under pressure. Premiums skyrocketing, choices shrinking, doctors are burning out, and now Obamacare subsidies are set to expire, putting millions of middle-class Americans on the edge of economic disaster. How did we get here? Why did Washington spend a decade slapping Band-Aids on this hemorrhage? And what must Republicans do right now before the midterms to stop a full-scale healthcare collapse? I'm Sky Nell Hughes. This is Perspective, Healthcare on the Brink, America's Medical Meltdown. The truth about your healthcare begins now. For years, we have watched Washington try to fix healthcare the same way a teenager repairs a broken car, with duct tape, denial, and the hope that nothing explodes. Politicians promised affordability. We got the opposite. They promised more options. We actually got fewer. They promised stability. Instead, we're teetering on the edge of a full-blown meltdown. And now, with Obamacare subsidies scheduled to disappear, millions of hard-working middle-class Americans are about to get slammed with premiums that look more like mortgage payments. This is what happens when Washington builds a healthcare system on bureaucracy instead of competition, on mandates instead of innovation, on political talking points instead of patient outcomes. Premiums are rising. Deductibles are outrageous. Small businesses are suffocating. Families are delaying necessary care because they cannot afford to walk in the door. And rural America, well, they're losing hospitals faster than Congress can spend your tax dollars. Now, let's be honest. The system isn't bending anymore. It's absolutely breaking. And here's the political reality the left doesn't want to admit. If Republicans don't step up with bold, pro-market, America First reforms before the midterms, Democrats are going to use this crisis as their excuse to push us straight into government-run, single-payer health care. So to help break us down on how we got here, who's benefiting from the chaos, and what happens next, we have Andrew Langer, host of The Andrew Langer Show and president of the Liberty Institute, and Phil Bell, founder and CEO of the Tower K Group. Thanks for joining me on this, gentlemen.
Always.
Thank you, Scotty.
You know, Langer, Andrew, I want to start with you. How did Obamacare set the stage for today's meltdown, specifically the vanishing carriers, the skyrocketing premiums, and shrinking doctor networks?
Well, listen, let's remember that the Affordable Care Act, this has always been the design in it. It's the transitional phase between the HMO model and the single-payer socialized medicine system. And it's always focused in the wrong way. I was saying this while Obama was running for president, right? If you focus on this as an insurance issue, you're focusing in the wrong place because we simply don't have enough doctors, nurses, and physicians' assistants to go around. And that's fundamentally what the supply issue is about, right? Anytime you have a declining supply and increasing demand, and that was the goal of Obamacare, was to increase demand, prices are going to go up. So they artificially push prices down to try to control them. And so the doctors, nurses, and physicians' assistants get out of the marketplace. We should have 15 years ago recognized this. The American Medical Association was warning us about the gap between the number of patients and the number of doctors we need to serve them. We should have at that point in time stepped up and in an Apollo moonshot style mission, been working overtime to create more health care in America. We didn't do that, and we're seeing the results today.
Oh, I definitely want to talk about the timing and the lack of preparation for this, Andrew, but I want to bring Phil into this conversation.
Please.
Because middle-class families are the ones I feel like are going to be most crushed by these expiring subsidies. The lower class are going to still have Medicaid. So, Phil, what does a real conservative America First alternative look like for those in the middle class?
Well, first of all, I want to say Andrew is 100% spot on with everything he was saying about how
Thank
we
you.
Got here. But second, what could a change look like? Well, Congressman Eric Burleson of Missouri, he's got a great plan. Austin Pfluger, he's got a great plan. And they're both basically the same thing, super HSAs. The HSA yeah. model has been something that is absolutely outstanding because think about if you took your 401k and you know the kind of flexibility that provides when you retire, you have your pre-tax dollars, you can go out, spend, do whatever you want after you reach a certain age. Well, what if you take that same model and you apply it to any time? And now you can contribute, whether it's $25,000, which is what Congressman Burleson has come up with, or what I would say, an unlimited amount, depending on what it is that you need. These are tax advantage dollars, and you can spend it as you need. So you can say, hey, you know what? Like me, I got bit by a dog. I needed stitches. So what am I going to do? I'll go to the place where it's the cheapest, where I know they'll do a good job, where it's nearby, whatever, as opposed to, well, will they cover this or will they not? That's a conservative way to go about it.
You know, it's interesting. Andrew, go.
Sean, let me just jump in, because what Phil's talking about here, by the way, is we have a fundamental misunderstanding of what health insurance is. It's not like homeowners insurance. It's not like car insurance, which are things that you deal with when you have a catastrophe in your life, right? You get into a car accident, you go and you use your auto insurance. We don't use our auto insurance to pay for our annual tune-ups in our car or regular maintenance. I just plunked down a few hundred dollars to put a battery in my car. I didn't go to insurance to do that. But health insurance, it should be on this model where you are saving for your everyday needs, your every year needs, your prescription drug needs, and then you have attached to an HSA, health savings account, you have a high deductible insurance plan that deals with situations in which when you get sick, when you have a need for that expensive medical care.
Okay, so but here's the thing, Andrew. Right. When I'm thinking about this, the transition of it, though, and I agree that, you know, but a lot of the argument on this is that you need to have preventable care when it comes to health care. And if you don't cover it, Americans aren't going to do it. And so it's going to cost more down the line. What's your answer to that?
Right, but that's it. That's exactly it. At the end of the day, we need to be encouraging people to get in to see their primary care physicians, whether it's their internists or their family doctors or their pediatricians for their kids, to get those checkups and to have an approach which changes lifestyles and gets people regularly being encouraged to make changes in their lives. But again, you don't need health insurance to do that. If you go to a straight fee-for-service model, it shouldn't cost you whatever it is right now, $36,000 a year. Most folks are just paying to go in for their family's annual checkups. If you're contributing even a portion of that into a health savings account and just paying your doctor out of pocket, out of your HSA for those annual visits or semi-annual visits, it's a much greater savings and you get much better care.
Okay, so Phil,
let me add some of that. So look at what you're saying, and here's why it works. If I, and because this is what I do, because I don't have health insurance personally, I go to the doctor and say, I want a checkup, or I want this, I want that, and I pay them, and they get the money, and that's it. There's nobody that has to go through and clear it with the insurance company, and that means the insurance company doesn't have to have a bunch of people who are on staff to handle that and make sure that Phil is covered and everything is done, and you have this whole intricate matrix. Nope, you pay, that's it. There should not be very much cost for them to say, yep, your blood pressure's high, your this is low, here's what you need to do, go forth, that's it. But if I did have a major incident, you know, a heart attack, whatever it is, that's where the cost is. And that's where, whether you're talking about the HSA or that catastrophic plan you're talking about, kicks in and helps make sure that I don't have the real cost associated with it.
And those do exist. But Phil, you mentioned that there's two Republicans right now that do have an idea for it going. And obviously, it would be a complete reverse, or it'd be completely different from what we currently have. It'd be very dramatic. But why aren't Republicans pushing those two plans if they actually have it? Because I have yet to see the Republicans come out with anything universal that they're going to push up against the Democrats on this.
Right. And that's the problem. There is so much fear. And this fear goes back to the 1990s when we did not believe that we could defeat Crooked Hillary with Hillary Care, even though we did. And there was always the perception that we as conservatives can't do as well when it comes to health care as the Democrats can, because they've always associated with themselves with being the people who care. What we need is for not only Mr. Burleson, who's done a great job, by the way, making the rounds on the podcast, the media circuit, talking about it, Austin Pfluger introducing his bill, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago. We need to see that come to the fore. Oh, also, Senator Rick Scott has something similar over in the Senate. But you are right. We need it to be out there loud and proud, and it needs to be everywhere.
Please stick around, Andrew and Phil, because we are just getting started. When we come back, what led to this moment? How did Washington ignore every warning sign while America's healthcare system crumbled underneath it? And what happens to middle-class families when these subsidies vanish for good on January 1st? That's next. Welcome back. Before the break, we laid out the stakes. And now we're actually going to dig into the heart of the crisis. You know, Obamacare's temporary subsidies are expiring. Premiums are climbing, and millions of Americans are about to feel the squeeze. So how did we get here? And what must Republicans do before the midterms? Well, joining us, let's get into it with our guest, Andrew Langer, host of The Andrew Langer Show and president of the Liberty Institute, and Phil Bell, founder and CEO of the Tower K Group. Thanks for staying with me, gentlemen. You know, Phil,
always.
Before we left, you know, we were talking about this is a very political issue right now, and it really absolutely makes me sick to think that Republicans and Democrats, both sides, will not actually find a solution because it's not beneficial to them. It might be beneficial to the people. But Democrats come at this and they argue the crisis proves that we need single payer. Why would that system make things worse? And how do Republicans communicate that without losing independence?
Well, it's simple. Look at what's happening right now. We already have a very, very large and robust intervention of government in the system, and the government is proving that it cannot keep the price of healthcare down. That means the costs continue to get foisted on we the people, and we have so little ability to say, hey, I like this or I don't like that. Well, what do you think is going to happen if we then say, okay, government, you're going to control all of it? And to anybody out there who's a leftist, let me ask you a question. Do you want Donald Trump to run your health care? Probably not. Do you want me to run your health care? Probably not. Therefore, the idea of single payer is absolutely terrible, especially when the people who you want to give the power to have proven they can't solve the problem.
Well, it's interesting because, Andrew, you know, a lot of states are saying, you know what, forget D.C. We're going to do our own version of this. We're going to try this out and work in our state. Tennessee's done it. They've had 10 care. They've had others. And it's worked a little bit better. But what roles do you think states should play in health care reform, especially these red states underneath a when we have more of a liberal White House? They want more flexibility to innovate outside.
Yeah, let's take a step back and talk about this, because you asked a very important question, which is how did we get here with all of this? And the fact is that the increase in cost was a feature. It was a part of the design plan. It was never, you know, it was not a flaw. And how we got here is that there was a devil's bargain struck when the Democrats were in control of Congress. They bought off a deal with the insurance companies, with big insurance, and said, hey, we know your premiums are going to have to go up as a result of this. We're going to give massive subsidies. So you will get paid as we move towards this single payer system that we want. They were very open about this, right? We know that eventually we're going to destroy the private health insurance market. So we're going to give you these buy-offs, you know, in the interim. So you'll make your money now, and then we'll figure out something down the road. And so that's how we got to where we are. When you have the AARP getting huge sums of money from United Healthcare, that helps to drive the narrative and scare a bunch of seniors that they're going to lose their Medicare benefits. And so they get activated to vote. But in terms of what the states can be doing, I mean, obviously there are lots of ways to do it. Some of it is block granting. Some of it is what the president has said, which is to actually put the money in the hands of individuals and give them the choices that they need to decide which plans that they want. But some of this also gets down to the issues of innovation. And some of it is about certificates of need and making it easier for new and innovative medical practices to form in these states and in these communities. Some of it is about licensing across state lines for doctors and nurses so that they can practice medicine elsewhere. So, you know, if you're a doctor who wants to live in rural America, you're a radiologist, there's no reason why you can't read x-rays in some inner city somewhere, and vice versa. There are all kinds of ways to go about doing this, and a lot of it stands to getting government out of the way.
Well, I always agree in getting government out of the way, but Phil, you know, tick-tock on the clock. January 1st, most people are going to see not only their premiums rise, you know, 10%, 400% is the average rise of what most middle class families are going to do. So should Republicans just go on and pass a temporary until we actually get a plan that we think we can pass? Should they go on and just extend these subsidies while it is?
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you why. This is a premier opportunity for Republicans, maybe not to have a generation of power in D.C., because I don't believe any party is ever going to have a generation of power, but to be able to open the door for so many more of the priorities that we have, such as cutting government permanently, such as, even more aggressive tax cuts and the like. We can pass these things that Mr. Burleson, Mr. Scott, and so on have talked about, and we can do it soon. The biggest problem the GOP has had is that we have not been as fast in legislating as we could have been. We could have had the tax cut bill passed a lot faster. We could have this passed before the end of the year and before people see those increases and have the time to get the word out. It can be done, and it should be done, but patching it and then trying to go later on and say, well, let's tinker around a little bit more, you know it won't get done.
Bill, do you hear what you're saying? We are in the holidays, and you're expecting Congress to pass a full health care reform bill in less than 3 weeks when the majority of them won't even be in Washington, D.C. for the rest of the month, I feel like, unless they're called back in. You really think that come January 1st, when the majority of middle-class Americans have to pay more than a mortgage, that you're going to make the American people suffer because the politicians couldn't do their job for the last 15 years?
Well, you're right. You're right. But here's the thing. They're going to have to come together and come to D.C. in order to extend the subsidies anyway. Rather than doing that, why not just pass? Like I said, this could be a great way to get closer to it. Pass that and give that as a present to the American people. And by the way, while you're doing that, give yourselves the present of getting reelected in November, because we all know that's the most important thing, is you want to get reelected in November, and nobody wants to deal with Speaker Hakeem Jeffries going out and doing investigations all the time. And by the way, if he gets that power, look at what's going to happen. We will get something worse than Obamacare and somebody worse than Obama to implement it. And that is truly scary.
Andrew, I've got to get your opinion. Are you as optimistic as Phil is that they can get this done in 3 weeks?
Well, I don't think they're going to get anything. I don't think they're going to get it done in 3 weeks. But I want to be really clear. I don't want to overstate the problem that's going to be happening. Let's be fair in that insurance rates have skyrocketed over the last dozen years in and of itself. And so a lot of folks, because of the Affordable Care Act, are already paying, you know, rates that are approaching mortgages. The reality is the subsidies were only supposed to be temporary. They were only supposed to last during COVID. And now that the COVID emergency is over, thankfully, folks don't necessarily need them anymore. At the end of the day, we have to be focused on the fundamentals, fixing the liabilities in our healthcare system and making sure that people are making more money, having more real wages in their pockets. That's the secret to this affordability issue. And I think, you know, when we're talking about the difference between January and the November midterms, a lot's going to happen. And if people are finding that by November of 2026, they have more money in their pockets because of a whole host of different initiatives, they will vote favorably.
I mean, I love your optimism, but this is one issue that I'm going to disagree with you on. I think going into these midterms, if we don't have a solution on the books as Republicans, $3,400 a month is not going to, most middle class families are just going to drop health care altogether. I agree, it needs to be done. But Phil, think about it. Do you think any Republican is going to get elected if every family is having to go bankrupt because they're paying a premium that they might not even use health care that month, but they don't want to have to, they don't want to get rid of the safety net while they have it?
Right. I think that's an absolute disaster, and it is an absolute invitation for a massive electoral wipeout. And we saw what happened in Virginia when you didn't have, very good leadership on your ticket and you didn't have a set of good issues you were running on. The result was not just bad at the top. It was bad all the way up and down. And keep in mind, and this is what I hope everybody in the audience understands, what the left wants is to steal a march on Donald Trump, because keep in mind, they are not just looking to have power so they can kind of mess around a little bit in Washington, D.C. They want to make permanent changes to the way we live, and we will rue the day that we did not solve this problem, even if it means a little bit of pain in December.
Once again, let me add to this. Yeah, Andrew.
real quick, because the only reason why families are going to have to pay this kind of money in their insurance premiums is because there is this thing called the individual mandate. And if they're no longer mandated to pay that money and they're given the opportunity to buy alternative products on the market that get them the health care that they need without costing them a mortgage payment, they're going to appreciate that. So, I mean, I think we have to remember there are ways to solve this problem without focusing on it as an insurance problem. I think if focusing on it as an insurance problem is the wrong way to go.
I agree. But when it comes down to it, without that system, and you and I both know, I mean, let's look at how long it took them to put the real ID into America. I mean, what, 20 years, 30 years to put that system change in? So you can imagine completely revolutionizing the healthcare system and how people sign up for it. It's not going to happen overnight. Let's just say a miracle in Washington, D.C. happens and they are able to pass it. It's not going to be able to be implemented. There will be absolute, I mean, imagine trying to register everybody for health insurance. How that would crash any computer system. Elon Musk couldn't even handle that kind of control or that kind of traffic.
Now, Scotty, think about it, though.
And we saw that, Phil and I both saw that in Maryland with the Anthony Brown-run Obamacare registration system. No, the reality is we're going in the other direction. If we're making it so you don't have to go down this road, if you no longer are mandated to buy this insurance product but are instead given the opportunity to save that money, again, people have the money in their pockets. They don't have to go to some government website. I think, and I agree with you, right? I'm being incredibly optimistic that it can be done. But I think that the political will can be there to do it.
I completely agree with you full term. Phil, I'm going to give you the last word on this one because I do agree with both of you long term. You are correct. You're hands down. I'm thinking of the next 3 weeks that and what that equals out into 8 months. Phil, last word to you.
Well, keep in mind, it doesn't have to be perfect. Many Americans are willing to give someone credit if they try. And if you try and you put it there and say, look, we built the system, we've lowered the cost for you now, there are going to be some bumps in the road, that's okay. They will be very happy with that as opposed to sitting there and saying, well, we can't do anything about it.
I love your optimism, gentlemen. I love the fact that you think Washington, D.C. can do anything besides spend our money in a three-week period. Talk about who the Grinch that stole Christmas would be. Thank you for joining me, both Andrew Langer and Phil Bell.
Thank you, Scotty.
Thank you, Scotty.
You know, we've exposed a very painful truth. America's healthcare crisis did not appear overnight. It was engineered by Washington's obsession with central planning and corporate protectionism. You know, for far too long, politicians treated healthcare like a political trophy instead of a system real Americans depend on to survive. Now the consequences are here. Vanishing options, suffocating costs, and a collapsing infrastructure that's leaving middle-class families stranded. But this is not the moment for Republicans to play defense. This is the moment to lead. They need to lead with solutions that are rooted in competition, not control. Affordability, not mandates. Freedom, not federal overreach. Because if Republicans don't act, Democrats will seize this crisis, and they're going to use it. Their lightning rod to force Americans into this European-style single-payer system that destroys choice, innovation, and medical freedom. This system is on the brink, but it is not beyond saving if the right leaders step up now. This has been Perspective. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. Thanks for watching.